Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare. It is Wednesday, June 24th. And today, I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 970. It's going to establish a task force on rural air ambulance services. Of course, we're not going to be passing any bill today, but we wanted to get the topic at least presented to the committee so that maybe some work can be done before 2016. But it came from Senator Farioli's office, and I would sort of like him to kick this off, if that would be all right. And he wants to have, is it Pete Reynolds?
Yes.
And Scott Ekblad? Oh, and just to let everyone know, Senator Cruz and Senator Steiner Hayward are on the Transportation Committee, and they are meeting in another room, so that is why they are not.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senator Ted Farioli, and thank you for being extravagantly generous with your time to hear this bill. It's very important to those of us that live in what I call Frontier Oregon. I'll just talk briefly about District 30. It's 34,000 square miles. The federal definition of frontier is 6 persons per square mile. And if you do the math on your population, which is the same as mine and all the other senators, it's equal, and then do the math and do the division, 34,000 square miles divided by that number of people, my population would have to increase several times just to reach the federal definition of frontier. So open space is not a problem. What can be a problem is emergency services in the places where people live and work or travel. And I hope that people will understand that it isn't just a matter for folks who are resident to the frontier Oregon. It's folks who visit there and recreate there and do outdoor adventure there, mountain biking, four-wheeling, hunting, rock climbing, hiking, boating, all the stuff that people in Oregon love to do, which can result in injury. So, you know, we are dependent on a group of folks that are out there that are mostly volunteers that do our emergency services, our first responders, or people from the community. And very often they encounter situations they simply cannot cope with in terms of injury, and the best practice is immediate evacuation to the nearest medical center. And often that is not affected by ambulance. Often that is affected by air rescue. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, over years, there has been a system that has grown up around that need to provide evacuations from both profit and nonprofit organizations that are either membership or subscribership, so that when people are injured, logging accidents, car accidents, accidents in the home, these services are absolutely critical for the well-being of the community. What we have encountered is a situation where jurisdictions overlap, subscriberships are for one company or the other, maybe not dual subscriptions, and occasionally because of the number of calls that are received, one of the services may respond to which the accident victim is not a subscriber. And in that case, the costs for that air evacuation, which is life-saving, is very expensive. And those costs can't be stranded with the private company, and they can't reside with the victim. You know, the costs are high, and they cannot go unpaid, because that jeopardizes the viability of the company providing the services. But if they're not insured, then that is a very serious burden for persons who are evacuated and then would have a bill in some cases in the tens of thousands. So I would like to take the opportunity to introduce Commissioner Reynolds, who's come here over high mountains and deep valleys and over many hours so that he can be here and tell the story of what happens in a community that routinely has these sort of incidences occur. So,
thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and the committee.
I'm here today and...
Say your name.
No, sorry. I'm Pete Reynolds, Harney County Commissioner, resident, lifelong. I'm here to bring an issue to you that we feel needs attention. Originally, memberships were sold to a nonprofit organization, which sold about 3 to 4 years ago. Then our county court has mentioned to this company that this is an issue that needs to be addressed, where we have for-profit flying in our area for rescue and a not-for-profit. Nothing is ever easy. I thought it was as simple as a reciprocity agreement. And I was told that they exist in other parts of the state between for-profits and not-for-profit air ambulances. But I have found that there's a lot more to that story. So we are a very large county, over 10,000 square miles, and there's no guarantee which company will respond to an accident for a variety of reasons. It could be the weather that it dictates which direction the air ambulance would come from. It could be the location of the accident. The air ambulance company first called could be at a scene of at another scene somewhere, in the large area.
I have one quick question. When you say air ambulance, is that helicopter? Is that what type of?
They send both to our area, fixed wing or helicopter. Helicopter can land more on site if conditions allow.
Okay.
So, and it could be dispatched to the hospital after ground takes a victim in. But you still could have those same weather restrictions, et cetera. We fear for where we have two servicing us that a company could choose flights that they want to make or don't want to make. But the bottom line is we need response immediately. We're large. It takes a long time to get to an accident in southern Harney County, from no matter which direction you come from. Our 911 supervisor feels restrained in making the call for an air ambulance. For the reasons of a non-for-profit would launch, and if ground got there and said we don't need the air, they would turn back. It's my understanding there's no charge yet. But the minute the for-profit launches, someone's on the hook for that fee. So she feels restrained in doing her job. I've heard discussions of the providers feeling they should get 50-50 on the calls. And I'm here I don't have a rub with either company. Mm-hmm. I'm just simply here. This is, like I said, it's 3 or 4 years ago that the non-for-profit sold to a for-profit. And I'm here to see if we can't put together a task force to come with a solution. Bottom line is we need the fastest response to the nearest medical facility. Some feel legislation may not be needed, but again, 3.5 years or better, and we're still at a point where I've made contact with 3 different people yesterday and today, just mentioning I was coming over here for this, who have memberships and are not aware that if they needed an ambulance and the other company was called, they would be on the hook for that bill. So I feel at least 75% of my county or those with memberships aren't aware. ALC stands, crew stands ready to help. And I'm offering my services. Deschutes County Commissioner Tammy Bainey has offered. This was looked at a couple of years ago and fell through and didn't get anywhere. So it's rekindling that. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for coming all the way over. This is a topic that this committee is not familiar with at all. And so you're going to have to bring us from the ground up on letting us know what even air and ambulance is.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Ekblad. I'm the director of the Oregon Office of Rural Health. And Senator Ferrioli and Commissioner Reynolds have done a great job explaining what the issue is. I'm going to add just another perspective. You might already know that the Oregon Office of Rural Health is located at OHSU. What you might not know is that we also have a statutorily mandated advisory body that is made up of professional organizations, but also consumer members from different parts of the state. And so this issue has percolated up through that advisory body and has come to our attention a couple different times. The primary problem from the consumer's perspective is that they have to buy memberships at more than one with more than one company in order to assure that they don't get stuck with this big bill should the other company be called when they need assistance. As I understand it, there's nothing really to stop two or three different companies from serving the same area. So if there's a third company, maybe they have to buy a third membership. It was expressed to our advisory body as simply becoming a financial burden for the people who were aware, and it could be an even larger financial burden for the people who aren't aware that a different air ambulance company could be called than the one to which they have a subscription. So what we did is we being our advisory body, the Rural Health Coordinating Council, invited representatives of a nonprofit air ambulance company and a for-profit air ambulance company and asked them to explain how their services work and were asked questions by our advisory body. We really did a whole lot of research into it. Unfortunately, no solutions were necessarily forthcoming. That's why I'm very happy to hear the commissioner and the senator taking the initiative to put together a task force and am offering the services and assistance of the Office of Rural Health on that task force.
Great. Questions?
Madam Chair, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I think I would venture to say that a disproportionate number of people who are injured in doing dangerous things in your district are probably from my district. So I get that issue. I think this issue goes even further to, patients who think that they are covered when they go into a particular hospital only to find out that the radiologist is not part of a particular health insurance plan. And I don't want to bring that into this issue, but I think you're scratching on the surface an issue that goes into five or six different realms. But I want to dive in and tackle this one. I'm glad you guys brought this forward.
I do have a specific question. Maybe it's for the next panel, but how much does one of these plans cost for the nonprofit versus the profit? Do you have that information?
I recently bought a membership for my son and my daughter. One was $75 and one was $65 annual. Daughter resides
dollars.
In dollars. Okay. Yeah. Daughter resides in Ontario. Serviced by the nonprofit and travels home a lot, but she could find herself in that predicament. Son lives in Burns, so I bought him the one that's most common in the Burns area, but if he travels to visit the daughter, something would happen, he would be in that same position. And I bought mine, and I went on, and knowing the story, knowing the situation, I went online to buy it, and I bought, I don't want to say the wrong one, because they're both right. But I didn't buy the one I thought I was buying. So,
all right. I did talk with one of our senators who had a problem with one of the patients, and I'm not quite sure. Anyway, it had to be flown, I think, to Idaho was the nearest place, and the insurance wasn't covering her or his plan. It ended up being $47,000, and I'm wondering, is that accurate, typical of a cost?
Well, Madam Chair, if I can have some indulgence from the committee, I'd like to disabuse Senator Shields of the notion that accidents only occur to Portlanders who come to the wilderness. That's not true. Accidents are far more likely to happen in the home. And if your home happens to be in the wilderness, you're going to have the same sort of grim statistics that would dog you. I stepped out of a garbage can and had a bilateral wrist fracture. And I'm really happy to say that I had this card in my wallet because it was the right card for the right ambulance service. And my flight was $22,000 from John Day to Bend. And pretty happy to make the flight as opposed to the three-hour drive. So I just want to tell you, there is no bad guy here. in any of this. There's just a situation that we need to resolve that should put people in a situation where they can obtain at a reasonable cost indemnification against the kind of costs that could be incurred. So this is over and above any kind of health care insurance policy that would be enforced. This is air evacuation. It's fabulously expensive. The people that show up are physicians, nurses, and pilots. And they show up in 20 minutes or 25 minutes because they're flying very expensive, very sophisticated aircraft that are outfitted specifically for the job of medical evacuation. So, you know, the costs are not unreasonable for what the service is. The issue for me is that even doing due diligence, purchasing coverage may not protect you from the liability for the fair reimbursement of the costs that are incurred when somebody's evacuated. We thought reciprocity would be the easy solution, but there aren't any easy solutions. And we have to recognize that the costs need to be fully recaptured. They can't be stranded so that the for-profit or the nonprofit corporation eats them, and they can't be visited upon the injured, because this is sort of an insult to injury. You know, the good news is you've been air evacuated and your injury is treated and you're in the recovery room. The bad news is you don't have any way to recover the costs from an insurance policy or membership for a medical air evacuation that may be in the tens of thousands or multiples of tens of thousands of dollars. It's a solution, or it's a problem that does need a solution. I'm going to commend this question to the wisdom of the committee, because I know if we get all the right people in the room, many of them are behind me, they will have suggestions for a solution. We would like a working group, because we don't want to leave anybody out of the conversation about how to solve the problem. And I'm confident that there's a solution somewhere, likely not in the Capitol building, because all the good solutions come from outside the Capitol building. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions? All right. Okay, Nanheim, and then Dan Britton. And
Jake Dahlstra.
Those are the next panel. And I do plan to have a work group. I have had, although they're not signed up, even the hospitals, small rural hospitals, are interested in participating in this work group also. So, all right, proceed.
Thank you, Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. My name is Nan Heim, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon State Ambulance Association. Our members are public agencies, private companies, and nonprofit organizations that provide ground and or air ambulance service throughout much of the state. And several of our members are here today to answer your questions. We have next to me Jake Dahlstra from Life Flight Network, based in Aurora. And when I say based, that's just where their headquarters are. And we have Dan Bratton with Cal Orr, based in Brookings. And behind me, Kevin Shatovsky from AirLink, based in Bend. And they are here to answer your questions today. And I think, as all of you know, ground ambulance service is really regulated by every level of government. And by statute, counties are designated to select ambulance service areas and select a ground ambulance service provider for each of those service areas. That is not the case with air ambulance service. Air ambulance service is regulated. It's almost the exclusive purview of the Federal Aviation Administration. And they do not select areas or assign them service areas. So this regulation or lack of it has led in some states in particular some pretty chaotic situations. I think really we are ahead of it here in Oregon because of what these individuals have done. They have organized their own group. They meet regularly. They discuss issues of common interest and concern and try to reach solutions that are in the best interests of the patients. I think that we would be very happy to work with any work group that you set up. I don't mean to imply that there aren't still issues out there. Obviously, there are. Providing air ambulance service in a state like Oregon, where there are remote areas with little population, can be very challenging and very costly. But we are here to help you and work with you in any way that we can. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to them to talk about what they do and answer all your questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman. My name is Jacob Dahlstrom. I'm a regional director for Life Flight Network. I represent six bases, and when we say bases, base of operations is where the aircraft sits. A little bit about Life Flight. Life Flight was started in 1978 out of Legacy Emanuel Hospital. We were the fourth flight program in the country. And today we have more than 17 bases across the Pacific Northwest. We are a not-for-profit organization. We are owned by four hospitals. We are owned by OHSU, Legacy Emanuel, Providence of Oregon, and St. Alphonsus in Boise, Idaho. We have bases in Washington State, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. We are an Oregon-based company. That is our sole purpose is to provide medical evacuation throughout the Pacific Northwest. And I'm here to answer any questions that the committee may have.
When you say you're a non-profit,
yes.
Tell me, your personnel, are they volunteers? Are they trained? I mean, I need a little background on what it means to be a non-profit.
Great question. So, no, we pay our staff. And so what that means, our nonprofit status, is that there's no stakeholders or people that profit from our organization. It all goes back into the organization. So every dollar that we make pays our staff. It buys our aircraft. It pays for our fuel.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Questions?
Hi, Madam Chair, Dan Bratton with Cal OROS, representing Reach Air Medical. Reach has helicopter bases in Corvallis, also have a helicopter in Klamath Falls, one in Coos Bay. Cal OR Life Flight is down on the coast in Brookings and Gold Beach with both air and fixed wing operations. Maybe just a quick distinction, two types of air ambulance that are typically in every location, and that would be a fixed-wing transport would be for interfacility, which would be hospital, the hospital transports. And, of course, as has already been described, scene work or helicopters, which, of course, go out to accident scenes and that kind of thing, although helicopters also do interfacility transports. Nan mentioned the association that is in place. It's started actually in Oregon. Several years ago, we formed a organization called AMRO, which was all the Oregon-licensed air providers. That's morphed now into a company or an organization called NWAR, Northwest Air Association Responders. And we represent Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. We come together three times a year. We discuss items, and it's basically centered around how do we provide better service to the rural communities that we serve. You've heard some examples already about rural, and believe me, down on the South Coast, we feel the same things that they do in Eastern Oregon. Just real quickly on membership, I think it's important to point out that just make sure everybody knows that when we get called, we don't care member or no member. We go. And we don't ask questions, how are we going to get paid, what are you a member of? A lot of times it's not even an issue. So whether it's Jake's company or Kevin's company, speak in a minute. When we get the call, we go. We don't ask questions. A lot of times we're called by hospitals, we're called by fire departments, we're called by emergency centers, and so that's what happens. What membership does, and it's actually some of it actually came out of Oregon years and years ago. Mercy Flights, who's not here today, they're out of town, but had a membership program years and years ago. It's just a financial benefit. So all of us bill the patient first, whether you're a member or not. We collect whatever your insurance will pay. And if you're a member, we bill you for the balance. If you're not a member, then we write that balance. Or excuse me, if you are a member, we write that balance off. So if you have an 80-20 plan, 80% we get paid. The 20%, if you're a member, we write it off. If you're not a member, we collect that. And that's really how it works. Another thing, important thing to know is that Medicare and Medicaid, you have to accept assignment. So Oregon Health Plan, we have to accept fully what we get from the Oregon Health Plan, and we can't bill the patient anything, whether they're a member or not. Same with Medicare. If Medicare patient is transported by us, we bill Medicare, and if they have a supplement, we bill their supplement, and we can't bill another dime. So we write our bills way down from what is allowed. In Medicare, typical Medicare flight today, you talked about rates, $5,000, $6,000, something like that is what we get reimbursed in Medicare. Oregon Medicaid's in the $3,000, $3,500 range. So it's the same, you talked about hospitals, the same issue with hospitals. And the commercial payers are the ones that will actually receive probably the membership benefit the most. And so that's how memberships work. Hopefully that's kind of clear, maybe.
And you are a for-profit? Or?
We are for-profit, yes.
And you're a for-profit. And, I mean, I can understand how if the hospitals are, there's more maybe cost share with the when you have those four large hospitals and your ambulance service is there. I mean, is there cost share with the hospital? And you, do you know what I'm asking here?
Sure. So you're asking, the company that I represent, Life Flight Network, we are a separate LLC from those four hospitals. So we are, all the money that goes in, that we make goes back into our organization.
Okay.
Does all that make sense?
Right. Yeah. When you said you were owned by OHSU Legacy Providence.
Right. So our ownership is those four hospitals, and our board consists of two representatives from each hospital, and that's who we report to.
But your budgets are self-contained.
Self-contained.
In your organization. And you're for-profit, the same.
Yes, and in both cases, and I think it's important, and you probably know this, but, you know, neither of us receive any tax benefit. It's all fee-for-service. We're not subsidized. And so the cost of really providing the service is the fixed cost of being ready. You know, the payroll costs, aircraft costs, insurance, et cetera. The cost to be ready to respond is really what we both face, whether you're for-profit or not-for-profit. So we don't receive any financial benefit until we provide a transport and collect a fee for that transport. And we do a lot of charity care. I mean, there's probably, in our company, 9-10% of our flights, we get nothing just because people don't have any insurance or they're maxed out or their insurance, their deductible's not met. So just one other, couple of just other quick things I think that to point out too, not every area ambulance provider has a membership program. That's simply a voluntary thing that companies do. So you're not required to have a membership program. There's many area ambulance companies that don't offer membership, something that is done a lot in Oregon, but there's many states that there's not membership. And so it's a voluntary thing that each company decides to do. And there's requirements that have to be met with CMS or Medicare when you offer membership. And some of those details we've been talking about with the providers and have to be actuarially sound. And there's a lot of testing that goes on with the membership program. So, but again, just to distinguish that membership is just a financial benefit if you get transported. But we all go, member or no member, and that's something that we all do.
Let's hear from is this the last?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
The last one. And then I have some specific questions, and we'll open it up.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. My name is Kevin Chitosky. I'm a nurse program director for AirLink Critical Care Transport out of Bend, Oregon. Our program turns 30 this year, in fact, in about a month's time. It's our 30th anniversary. We were hospital-based for 28 years out of St. Charles in Bend. And the air ambulance component, which is AirLink, was assumed in terms of operations by MedTrans Corporation, which is owned by the Medical Group Holdings, the same ownership group as Mr. Bratton's organization as well. So we work for sister organizations. We have we fly fixed wing and rotor out of Bend, Oregon, and we have a fixed wing and a helicopter in Klamath Falls, which has been there since October. And I'm happy to answer whatever questions.
Okay, let's get down to the nitty-gritty then. Reciprocity. What I would hope that when everybody gets together in a work group, and I would like Sandy to coordinate that through probably Senator Ferrioli's office, and then we want to make sure the hospitals. But just, you know, we have in-network and out-of-network providers. Mm-hmm. And you do pay more, but we have a setup where if you're out of network, you have to pay, I don't know, Chip, you know more about in network and out of network.
Pay a lot less if you're in network.
Yeah, but if you're in network, and so it seemed, from what I'm hearing, it sounds like if you have a policy with one of your companies, but the other company flies in, then there's no coverage whatsoever. So you don't have sort of an in-network, out-of-network type situation.
So I can speak for LifeFlight Network. We do have several partners throughout the Pacific Northwest that we're partners with, which means that if they are a member of LifeFlight Network and they are in Spokane or Seattle or in Northern California, it's the same coverage as if we were flying them. We have several partners throughout the Pacific Northwest. Airlift Northwest, Northwest MedStar, Island Air, CalSTAR in Northern California. So we have several partners that we partner with. And we would like to partner with AirLink in Central Oregon. But I think there's a difference of opinion. Unfortunately, I think that AirLink, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, but we would very much want to become a partner with AirLink in Central Oregon to get rid of this confusion, because certainly I understand the public's perception that you have to have both memberships, and people think that they're covered and they're not fully covered. And I understand that if somebody were to get flown for a medical emergency, if they're in St. John's or Burns and they had a membership and thought that they weren't going to receive a bill and they get a bill, how life-changing that can be for somebody. And that's the last thing that I think both Kevin and I would want for anybody. Understanding that private bankruptcy, the number one reason for private bankruptcy is due to medical costs. And we understand that our industry, because of the nature of it, is very expensive. And that's why we work so hard to educate the public about our membership program and promote it so hard.
So Mr. Dahlstrom and I have had a lot of conversations about this. AirLink has been a private for-profit for approximately 2.5 years now. Actually, well, 3 years and three, yeah, a little over 3 years. So the difference in opinion is a legal one, and it has to do with, in terms of reciprocity, it has to do with the waiving of Medicare co-payments and the legality and the conditions of participation across our footprint. So we have differing legal opinions of that. However, we've had some initial discussions about this at various points over the years. However, I believe both companies at this time are very willing to work together, and we've both voiced the intent to do so moving forward. So this is something we will have our legal counsels have that meeting of the minds and come up with an equitable solution for all of our patients.
And I think that's really important, because when you get right down to it, when you have someone who's taking the call and is very concerned about choosing the nonprofit versus the profit, naturally you're going to go with the nonprofit because you want to make sure that they aren't going to be footing a huge bill.
So in terms of the decision for which aircraft or which company, which service to go for, those are hardwired in geographical regions. The last thing either of our company wants is for that burden to be placed upon the paramedic at the roadside. Should I ask for this air ambulance knowing that this could, you know, result in a financial burden for this patient, which in many cases is their next-door neighbor or is their colleague or somebody they know in these small frontier communities? So to address that, we have worked together in hardwiring through the 911 dispatch center, through it's frequently a question asked at the bedside. A lot of times that's what predicates exactly which air ambulance service some of these smaller community hospitals are going to use. Who is your membership through? So it's very much ingrained into that culture. However, it's important for us though to take the decision making out of it, such that it is predictable, it's hardwired, and to Mr. Bratton's point, we do give away an enormous amount of care. I think an important concept to consider here, and that is that of medical necessity. Medical necessity dictates you will have, there are patients that are appropriate for air ambulance, there are patients that are appropriate for ground ambulance. Vastly different fees, vastly different fee structures, vastly different reimbursement kind of pictures. Both of our companies, through our national accreditation CAMES, have to be very concerned or have to concentrate on this medical necessity and establishing this medical necessity. In that, if they do not require that air ambulance bill, that could the insurance will read this claim and say, well, this doesn't meet the criteria for air ambulance, so we're not paying a penny. With those kinds of situations, we do give away an enormous amount of care. We do forgive an enormous amount of charge, and we try to work very closely. Our patient financial services works very, very closely with these patients in those kind of scenarios, and frequently we'll write that off.
So could states, because I'm not sure the difference between federal rulings and state rulings, could the state require every service in the state of Oregon to be a part of the LifeFlight network? I mean, is that... I'm not sure I have my terminology.
So, right. Madam Chair, I think the question that you're proposing is, can the state require that every air medical provider reciprocate with each other?
Oh, okay. Yes. I thought that you said that you had a network of people all over, and if everyone could be a part of that network to then work out reciprocity. But isn't that what you do with all of your...
Right. So the other air medical providers we partner with, right, that's exactly right. Their membership is good with us, and our membership is good with that.
Okay. But could the state require that? That there has to be reciprocity. I just want to know. I don't know.
I couldn't answer. Bless you. I couldn't answer that.
Do you know?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. My sense is probably not. I think it's a voluntary program that each of us do. I don't think you can require. I don't know this. I'm not a lawyer, but I don't think you can. But
I'm just throwing some ideas out. What do other states do? I'd like to know. Do other states have this problem too?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, I think it's a discussion topic in other states as well. Also, one thing I think is important to point out, the gentleman, Mr. Reynolds, testified, I don't know of any provider in Oregon that bills if they don't transport a patient. I don't think that happens. I just want to make that clear. I don't think there's any provider that bills if you get called to a scene and you don't transport a patient, there's no bill.
Yeah.
I'll make sure that's
clear. We're canceled.
We just cancel. We go back. So
that's correct.
So, do you have any questions?
I don't think so.
Well, I think we sort of know what the problem is. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where we're going to go with a solution on this. I would like to be able to find out, and I don't know who the right person is. Scott, are you, idea how the rural health people, but if we had a work group, and I think that Sandy will coordinate that with Senator Farioli's, and it can be just by phone. You don't, you know, a lot of these work groups can, it can happen by phone, but it would be nice to find out some scenarios. I would like to know where the feds are. I don't know anything about who from the federal aviation. Do we have an aviation something in the state here?
Oregon Department of Aviation.
Oregon Department of Aviation. See, that's all. That shows you what I know. You know, to maybe do some research for us too on some of this type
Let's,
of
let's just pass a law. We don't have to do that research.
That's true. Just pass the law. All right. So, does the hospitals want to weigh in, or does? Okay.
No.
All right. Okay, so we're going to leave it up to the work group, and then in September we'll have informational days, and in November we'll have informational days. So maybe it's probably the November one. We'd like to see where the progress is so that if we do have legislation, we'd like to submit it if we need to have legislation in by the end of November. For the 2016, and I just have no idea if once we get into the mandates, that's a little, might be a little sticky, but okay. Is there anyone else that wants to testify on this? Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it, and I hope that maybe something productive out of this will happen.
Well,
all right.
Thank you.
All right. Maybe we don't need legislation. Maybe we'll. Okay. With that, I will close the information public hearing on Senate Bill 970, and we are adjourned. 970, and we are adjourned. Public hearing on Senate Bill 970.